Good afternoon. We're going to start the Committee on Property Tax and Local Tax to bring it to order and have a walkthrough of the property tax article, really, of the tax bill. So there will be more to come. This is a piece. But thanks very much for your interest. I think we've got a very exciting bill, frankly. I think there's a lot of good stuff in it, and carving a little bit of new ground with respect to some of this aids and credits. And I don't know how we'll... we're not really going to do, a lot of discussion. I think we just want to hear the input from both Joel and Pat Dalton, and just thank them very much for the hard work putting it, making it available today. And Steve Hines, absolutely. So really this is for information, and we will have a hearing on it next Wednesday, and that's when we can get to a lot of the debate. We have Joel. Are you starting, Joel?
Madam Chair, I'll start, and then we'll switch to Pat and Steve as time goes on. Just the first article of the Delete Everything Amendment relates to economic development and is largely a collection of tax increment provisions. Section 1 is Representative David's bill that was heard by the division yesterday. This is House File 445, the provision that mistakenly got deleted from the conference committee report last year with the amendment that the division adopted. This is the provision that relates to pooling for market rate housing. Section 2 is the special provision, the chair's provision for Lionel Lakes. There are no changes in that. It's as the division heard it yesterday. I'm sorry. Section 2 is the Ramsey provision, not the Lionel Lakes provision. There are two changes in this provision from the version that the division heard yesterday. First of all, the provision that allowed the city to capture the taxes from those two buildings that building permits had been pulled on before the city had approved the TIF plan was dropped from this, so that's not included. And the total exemption from the four-year knockdown rule is not in this, but instead the four-year period is extended to a six-year period. So those are the two changes in that bill from what the division heard yesterday. Section 3 is the Lionel Lakes provision, as the division heard it. Section 4 is Representative Barrett's bill, which provides a border city development zone for the city of Taylor's Falls with $100,000 allocation for that purpose. And those are the economic development provisions. Pat will next go through the local sales taxes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Article 2, the local taxes, it's primarily local sales taxes with a couple of other things. Section 1 is Representative Marquardt's bill that basically prohibits promoting a local sales tax for another 2 years. It will not apply to anything that is also passed in this bill, so it won't apply to the local sales taxes here. Section 2 is a provision we heard allowing Glenwood Township to impose the aggregate materials tax, the gravel tax, if the county does not. Section 3 is from Representative Lincheski's bill related to the Hennepin County Ballpark sales tax. It repeals the inflation factor on the $4 million limit on expenditures for youth activities and libraries. Section 4 is the provision from that bill that limits the deposit in the reserve fund to $20 million. Section 5 is the Representative Murphy's Hermantown sales tax extension to 1% with voter approval. Section 6 is a modification of the local sales tax bill for Rochester. Instead of allowing $160 million in additional projects, it allows $101.5 million. The projects moved out were essentially the projects related to youth and elderly services and to some of the economic development. Section 8 is just related to that. Section 9 is the Clearwater sales tax bill that just doesn't really change their provision, the limit on the tax, but it allows the uses that were originally allowed in the original bill. Section 10 is the City of Fergus Falls local sales tax for its ice arena. Section 11 is the Hutchinson sales tax for their wastewater treatment facility. Section 12 is the Representative David's local sales tax bill for the City of Lanesboro. Section 13 is the local sales tax bill for the City of Marshall. Both projects were left in. However, a requirement is made that the question on each of the two projects be held separately. Section 14 is the local sales tax for the City of Medford to repay its Minnesota Public Facilities Authority loans related to its wastewater improvement system. The one thing I have not mentioned, all of the local sales taxes here, if they originally had a general or special election authority, all of that, the special election authority has been removed. They must hold their referendums at a general election. And then Section 15 is Representative Murphy's study that requires the Department of Revenue to do a study on the use of zip codes as it relates to the accuracy of local sales tax collections. And with that, we will start on the property tax article, which Mr. Hines will cover.
Madam Chair, members of the division, Steve Hines from House Research. Starting on page 19, Article 3, property taxes. Section 1 is an exemption for an electric generation facility in the City of Fairmont. This was Representative Gunther's bill. Section 2 is Representative Marquardt's bill, which requires the specific notification to be made when a property changes classes between 1 year and the next. Section 3 is, and Section 4 are provisions that are of Representative David's bill to allow a preferential tax classification for inns located in cities on state trails. That's Section 3 and 4. Section 5 on page 27 is a provision of Representative Lemire, which provides that the penalty dates for property taxes will be the same for all properties instead of the preference now given to homestead properties. Section 6 and 7 are a modification of the Representative Biskin's bill that we heard in Division 2, which his bill abolished regional rail authorities. This version is quite different from that in that it basically vests the authorities that regional rail authorities have in the county government itself. So there's no real change in tax authority, but there's no longer a regional rail authority. It's all of that power is now held at the county board, and they're required to include the regional rail levy with their regular levy. Their any levy they want to make for regional rail purposes is part of the levy limit, et cetera. Ms. Dalton, do you have anything you want to add on that? Ms. Dalton worked with Representative Biscuits on that provision. Section 8, repealer, that's just another part of the Lemire bill on penalty dates. And that's all for Article 3.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, Article 4 actually has a lot of the meat of this bill. It reduces the payment for renter's credit from 19 to 14.5%. It has a reduction in local government aid payments, particularly in the metropolitan area. It reduces county program aid. It eliminates market value credit program beginning in page 2012. It eliminates political contribution refund, and it makes a permanent cut to payments in lieu of taxes on natural resource land. That's kind of the big overview, and this one we're going to have to tag team because different ones of us actually cover this. I will start with Section 1 and Section 2. Both relate to the permanent reduction of PILP payments to 85% of current levels, and this relates to the public hunting land and to the goose management cropland. And
Section 3 is the elimination of the political contribution refund. Sections 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 all relate to are part of the bill that we heard yesterday, Representative Runbeck's bill, to convert the market value homestead credit into a tax capacity reduction. And this provision is identical in the division report, is the same as it was in committee yesterday. Section 9 is the another bill that we heard yesterday, Representative Runbeck's bill, to reduce disparity reduction aid certified amounts by cutting them in half for taxes payable in pay 12 and thereafter. Section 10 is related to the conversion of market value credit. Section 11 is another disparity reduction aid provision. Currently, you're only disparity reduction aid can't get more disparity reduction aid than the amount that would reduce your tax rate to 90%. And this provision increases that 90% to 105%. So disparity reduction aid for any given area is capped at the amount that brings them down to a tax rate of 105%. Section 12 is another relation to the market value credit conversion. Section 13 is part of the political contribution refund elimination, as is Section 14. Sections 15, 16, 15 and 16 are related to the change in the renter's credit to using an assumption of 14.5% of rent as property taxes from the current 19%.
Section 17 is an alternative process for county consolidation. Currently, counties have to have a petition signed by 25% of their voters. This allows them to do a unanimous resolution adopted by each board and kind of jumpstart the process. Section 18 is, sections 18, 19, 21, 22, and 23 all relate to the local government aid program. Sections 18 and 19 make a definition of first-class city and a definition of suburb. First-class cities are essentially Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. Suburbs are any cities located in the metropolitan area that are not a first-class city. Section 20 is actually a county program aid provision.
Section 20 specifies that county program aid will be the same for every county in calendar 2011 and 2012 as the lesser of the amount received in 2010 or the amount certified in 2011. This is a provision that was in House File 130.
To make it a little bit more understandable, I'm going to skip around on the sections. Section 23 essentially is the aid payments for cities in 2011 and 2012. It defines a base aid amount, which is equal to the lesser of 2010 paid LGA or certified 2011 LGA. In paid 2011, first-class cities will receive 75% of this base aid. Other cities in the metropolitan area, the suburbs, will receive 50% of this base aid, and the remaining cities in outstate Minnesota, other than Duluth, will receive their certified 2011 LGA amount. For pay 2012, first class cities will receive 50% of this aid base. The suburbs will receive no aid beginning that year, and they are permanently removed from the local government aid program at that point. And the remaining cities will receive their aid base. This is the amount that they would have received under the House File 130. Now going back up to Section 21, Section 21 essentially finishes the phase out of local government aid payments to first class cities, which was begun in Section 23. These cities will get 25% of their base aid in pay 2013, and then they will be zeroed out beginning in pay 2014. Section 22 is just some clarifying language necessary to establish the minimum and maximum increases used for the outstate cities beginning with aids payable in 2013 and later, and states that these limits on increases and decreases do not apply to the phased out cities. Section 24 is the appropriation for local government aid and for county program aid in pay 2013 and 2014 and thereafter. The appropriation reflects, for LGA, reflects the phase out of the aid payments to the first class cities, and the amount that is shown of for pay 2014, $265 million, is essentially the rural area's share of House File 130 LGA, and that's the amount that goes forward, but it will be redistributed among those outstate cities based on the formula beginning in 2013. The county program aid appropriation is also frozen at that House File 130 aid amount for future years. Section 25 eliminates a cross-reference to the inflation factor in the PILT payments, which is repealed in Section 33. Section 26 is the reduction in the per-acre payments made to on PILT to 85% of the 2011 current law, and it also eliminates inflation in future payments on a per-acre basis. Section 27 adjusts the allocation of PILT payments from the county to the townships proportionately to reflect the 85% reduction. Section 28 is the 85% reduction in the Lake Vermilion State Park and Sudan Mine State Park PILT payments. Section 29. I'm going to hand back.
Section 29 is the another section related to the reduction in the assumption of rent for property tax refund to 14.5%. Section 30 provides that in 2011, market value credits for cities and counties will be no greater than the amount that they received in 2010 for market value credit. Section 31 has to do with the market value homestead credit conversion, and it is a provision that tells the states that the property tax statement in the transition year should reflect that the 2011 property taxes, the market value homestead credit is rolled into the gross tax amount for comparison purposes.
Section 32 is a new grant program administered by the Commissioner for Administration. It allows grants of up to $100,000 to be made to local governments to plan and implement service cooperation agreements with at least one other local government. The grants are made on a first-come, first-served basis, and right now the total appropriation is blank. It will depend on the amount of money in the spreadsheet. The final section in this article, Section 33, contains three repealers. It repeals the political contribution refund program, and the section of data practices laws related to political contribution refunds. That's paragraphs A and B. Paragraph C repeals the market value credit reimbursement reduction for towns beginning with pay 2011. They had a permanent reduction of $5 million a year. This is given back to them for pay 2011. And paragraph D repeals the inflation factor used in the PILT payments.
Paragraph D actually is the repeal of the Sustainable Forest Initiative program. And some of the language in the effective date on that section also relates to the repeal of the Sustainable Forest program.
I'm sorry, the PILT payments was in also in section paragraph C.
Mr. Hines, is there other language then relating to the Sustainable Forest issue? Is that
Madam Chair, it's the only language is just the repealer and the effective date. Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the last article is Article 5, the property tax freeze. Section 1 defines who is subject to this article. It is any county or home rule or charter city that has an LGA or county program aid payment. If they do not have a payment under either of those two programs in paid 2012, they are not subject to this article. A local county or city can also choose to be exempted from this article by choosing to forego either their local government aid or county program aid payments in calendar year 2012 and informing the Commissioner of Revenue of that intent. Section 2 is kind of the meat of this. It sets up the levy limit for qualifying counties and cities. It's only in place for paid 2012, and the limit is equal to the greater of whatever you levied last year or 102% of your paid 2010 levy. So if your levy between 2010 and 2011 grew by more than 2%, you are frozen at your paid 2011 amount. If it grew by less than 2%, you are essentially allowed a little bit of growth. Section 2 also provides for some adjustments to that levy limit. You may levy above that limit for debt obligations sold and purchase agreements entered into prior to June 1st, 2011, or for any bonds authorized by referendum, and I have been informed we need a slight language change to make that one work. There's an adjustment for annexations. There's an adjustment for the fact that the regional rail authority levies are now being taken over by the counties. There's an adjustment for new construction, an adjustment to cover costs of natural disasters, an adjustment for lost utility valuation aid, transition aid due to utility property valuation increases, and a local government can go over the limit by any amount approved by the voters. Section 3 has the prohibition against new debt. Allows for refunding bonds, obligations that don't increase the taxing authority's debt service levy, or for bonds approved by the voters. Defines when a bond is long-term contract is considered to have been entered into before June 1st, 2011. Section 4 freezes the benefit ratio for apportioning payable 2012 levies in a rural service district. Section 5 contains a freeze on all state requirements for local funding matches or grant matches imposed on local tax authorities for 2012, and it prohibits this freeze from reducing the eligibility or funding level to a local taxing authority subject to this freeze because if it met its local match requirements in 2011. Section 6 relates to the local police and fire pension liabilities. It says those levies may not go up, and it explicitly states that this freeze does not change a municipality's eligibility for police or fire aid. And then Section 7 is the savings clause that essentially says the freeze does not constitute an impairment on making payments on bonds issued, installment, or lease contracts entered into prior to June 1st, 2011.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Dalton. We'll have some time for questions from the committee if there are things you need clarification on. And also, Ms. Schill is going to go through the spreadsheet for us.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members, Kathy Schill, House Fiscal. The spreadsheet is a miraculous 3 pages long. It was at 1.6 pages long. So we really consolidated here. On the first page, you see two major areas of the bill identified items. Lines 1 through 5 have property tax changes. And the only one of note, actually, it's a negligible revenue estimate for the David's bill. So you don't have any cost showing there. Line 6 through 22 reflect property tax changes for local government. That includes a number of TIF provisions along with the local option sales tax provisions. The only item that would have shown up on the spreadsheet with a number is the line 22 Representative Biskin's bill. Actually, that has some property tax refund and income tax interactions that have been grouped together and show up at the end of the spreadsheet. There are a number of different provisions that have those kinds of impacts, and we just group them together for better understanding, easier reading. So we'll get to that on line 63-64. Moving to page 2, which once again kind of following Ms. Dalton's reference, this is the meat of the bill. First of all, line 27, we have House File 982, which is a mirror of Article 4 of House File 130. So you'll see very familiar at this point some of the provisions. First of all, line 28, reducing the renter's credit. This is at a 14.5% reduction percent of rent paid, as opposed to House File 130 that had a 15% of rent paid. The difference in revenue impact is about $13 million over the 12-13 biennium. The repeal of the SFIA, which is Sustainable Forest Investment Act program. These numbers are directly from the February 2011 forecast impact over the biennium, a cost savings of $31.4 million in 12 and 13, a cost savings in fiscal 14-15 of $36.7 million. Just going back, bumping up to the renter's credit, let me read those cost savings as well. Over the biennium, a cost savings 12-13, fiscal 12 and 13, $118.7 million, and then for 14 and 15, $121.5 million. Continuing down, the elimination of the political contribution refund, cost savings there of $11.8 million in FY 12 and 13, cost savings of $12 million in 14 and 15. The next set of impacts are reflected in lines 33 through really the onto the next page, line 58. These are changes in property tax aids and credits. Starting on line 34, we have House File 1007, Representative Runback. This is including only the PILT provisions in the bill on the spreadsheet. Cost savings in fiscal 12 to 13 is $8.2 million, and in fiscal 14 and 15, $10.3 million. This was actually, I show on the spreadsheet that it's calculated at 85% of certified pay 2011 levels. The reference earlier was there's a reduction of 15%, same thing. Once again, you'll see in this line also that we have property tax refund and income tax interactions, once again referenced on lines 63 and 64. Moving to line 36, House File 1045, which is the reduction in disparity reduction aid. The first of all, this includes the change in the threshold to 105%, and then the rate reduction, or the applied reduction of 50% to certified pay 2011 levels. Cost savings there, beginning in fiscal 2013, approximately 9.6 million in the first biennium, and then that continues out to 14 and 15 for a total of 19.2 million in savings. Once again, there are interactions reflected on lines 63 and 64. Lines 39 through 42 reflect changes in the LGA payment. I've identified how the impacts are for fiscal 12, 13, 14, and 15. The overall reductions here are about, in fiscal 12 and 13, about 80 million deeper in a reduction than what you saw in House File 130. For fiscal 12 and 13, cost savings is $291.1 million. In fiscals 14 and 15, $487.8 million. Once again, we'll have PTR and income tax interactions reflected on line 63 and 64. Line 44, House File 982, this is a component of that bill, the reduction in the county program aid. How this one differs from House File 130 is that it continues into the tails with the reduction of almost $4 million per year. Savings over the 12-13 biennium, $72.7 million, and approximately that savings also in fiscal 14 and 15. Line 48 is the beginning of the changes to the market value credit. Line 49 and 50 shows the impact on fiscal 12 only. That's pay 11, fiscal 12. Those reductions are the same as what was contained in House File 130. Moving on to the page 3, line 51 is the rest of the change to the market value credit. This is the conversion to tax capacity reduction in fiscal 13 and beyond. Basically, you have a reduction of $261.2 million in fiscal 13, and then in 14 and 15, the total reduction is $538.6 million. Once again, we have income tax interactions, property tax refund interactions. Total changes to the market value credit, fiscal 12 and 13, $365.3 million, and then in fiscal 14 and 15, $538.6 million. Line 55, the reduction in the market value credit for the agricultural market value credit. That is what was contained in House File 130. Line 56, we know that there will be some interactions with K-12, but we haven't yet heard back from Department of Education to give us the detail. So this line right now is a placeholder, and when we get more information on that, we will share it with the committee. The subtotal for property tax aids and credits changes. In fiscal 12 and 13, this adds up all of those lines from back to line, 33. In fiscal 12 and 13, reductions of $746.8 million and reductions in fiscal 14 of $1.128 billion. Line 60, we move into the appropriations. This is the local government redesign innovation grants. At this moment, from the best information that we have, appropriations for this activity just slightly over $4 million per year, starting in fiscal 12 and then extending out to 14 and 15. So for the fiscal 12 to 13 biennium, $8.1 million, and in fiscal 14 and 15, $8 million. Then we get to lines 63 and 64, where we have the combined property tax refund interactions and income tax refund interactions. Approximately $14 million for fiscal 12 and 13 for PTR, then it bumps up to $27.6 million in fiscal 14 and 15. And then the income tax interactions, $14.3 million in 12 and 13, $28.8 million in 14 and 15. Line 66 gives you the grand total of all of these proposals. Fiscal 12 and 13 reductions total $872.2 million, and in fiscal 14 and 15, $1,234,000.4. You'll see on line 67 the division bills target, and on 68 the difference between what was proposed and what the target is, and that is reflected as zero. And then lines 70 through 75 just basically are technical calculations as we prepare to go to Ways and Means when that moment gets here.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Schill. Are there any questions? Any comments and your thoughts on this, of course, very welcome. So please don't hesitate to share them with us. And we're going to meet on Wednesday and Wednesday morning and take up the bill at that point. So we'll see you then. And we will adjourn. Thank you.